hotline now and bring in D. Orlando Ledbetter, who covers the Falcons for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. D. Orlando, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Matt and Nathan.
Always good to talk to you. The Falcons come up here, game two of the preseason for both of these teams. And with this Atlanta Falcons team, a lot of talent on offense. Are we going to see everybody there, and how much do you expect those starters to play?
They're going to try to open it up. They had a difficult time last week, only 2-3 and outs by the offense. So they want to try to open it up, at least get a drive going. Not expecting to see the starters much past the first quarter. But if they get a first drive and get a scoring drive, then they might get the night get an early night off too. So we'll see how that works out for them here tonight.
You mentioned last week, what are some of the key things that you believe the Atlanta Falcons are going to focus on coming out of their week one preseason game that we might be able to see as Browns fans? Is it a down-the-field throwing game? Is it a testament to running the football a little bit more or stopping the run after that first week?
Yeah, they want to get the running backs in some kind of groove. Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman, those are the guys they're going to rely on to carry the ball. They didn't run it well last week. They want to kind of get them revved up here for the season. And the passing attack will come off of that running game. Of course, they want to get Julio Jones a little work, too. He likes to work himself into shape and, into playing, shape. He's in fine shape athletically, but game shape and making play type of shape. So those are the three keys for the Falcons, getting that running game. With Freeman and Coleman going, and then trying to get Julio and Jones involved. That's the staple of their attack.
There are some faces down there that are very familiar to the Browns, and we'll start with center Alex Mack. What has he been like since coming to the Falcons?
Oh, just a sheer delight. He's learned a lot of football up here playing with Joe Thomas, and he's trying to pass that on to his mates down in Atlanta. Old Cal guy, smart guy who has played in this system before. So he's been well received by the Falcons, and certainly Matt Ryan has been pleased to have him on board. He's going to be a stabilizing force, the Falcons believe, for that offensive line.
So just focus on the defensive side of the football. How are things shaping up for both Vic Beasley and your number one overall pick, Keanu Neal, defensively? Are they going to be the breakout stars of this defense?
They potentially could be, guys. Keanu will make his debut tonight. He didn't play last week, had a bruised torso, trunk-type injury, and he'll be playing tonight. He's a guy they like to drop down in the box as a strong safety to, slow down the run game. And they also believe he can cover tight ends and running backs in coverage. So, they are hoping he's their enforcer. They're hoping he could be their kind of Cam Chancellor over there on that side of the ball. Beasley should benefit from a move to strong side linebacker in the base defense. He won't have to fight all those 300-pound tackles and so forth. So, we're looking for him to have a breakout year, potentially, and so we'll monitor that throughout the preseason here.
Talking with D. Orlando Ledbetter, who covers the Falcons for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. And you, not only are the Browns fans certainly familiar with Alex Mack, but of course, Cincinnati Bengals fans, of course, Hugh Jackson, our head coach, very familiar with Mohamed Sanu, probably instrumental in getting him the big contract he signed with the Falcons. How has Sanu been, and do you think he's a guy that's going to be able to step in and replace, Atlanta Falcons legend Roddy White?
Yeah, Mohamed has been off to a slow start, but, they expect things to pick up for him. He's going to have a pretty good opportunity to make some plays for the Falcons because Julio Jones attracts so much attention. But you can see his athletic ability, his route running, and they're just kind of getting him incorporated into the attack. They certainly, they're not asking him to replace Roddy White, but in the fans' minds, Roddy White had 80 catches just a couple years ago. So they're used to getting productivity out of both of those wide receiver spots. And, Sanu's career high is only 56 catches. So they did have to overpay for him. But if they can get a steady and quality receiver over there at that other spot, that's all they really want. They don't really need another all-world guy. And I think he can do that.
We talked about Keanu Neal, and you said he's going to make his his debut tonight. But just focus on the Atlanta Falcons draft from this past year. What are some of the other names that Cleveland Browns fans or people listening nationally that need to be watching and staying in tune for as Atlanta season gets going?
Yeah, they went 3-3, three offense, three defense in the draft, and they think they got potential starters in second-round pick Deion Jones, the linebacker from LSU, and Devondre Campbell. The Big Ten folks might remember him. He's from Minnesota. He was selected in the fourth round, and the Falcons are trying to convert him to a weak side linebacker. And so far, that's looked pretty good. So if that works out, they might have three starters out of this draft. And Jones, the middle linebacker, Campbell, the weak side linebacker, and then Keanu Neal at strong safety. So that would be a big shot in the arm coming off of Vic Beasley from last year, and then going out and signing some guys in free agency like Derek Shelby, Courtney Upshaw, bringing back Sean Weatherspoon, guys of that ilk. So they're trying to get that defense a little bit better, a little bit more fierce on that side of the ball.
When you look at this team and the other connection, obviously, with the Browns, Kyle Shanahan was here for one season. Now he's in Atlanta. How has that team kind of assimilated to his offense? Because when you watched them last year, it seemed like they got off to a very quick start. And then as the season went on, it kind of fizzled a little bit on the offensive side of the ball. How was the Kyle Shanahan era going down there?
It's a little bumpy. A lot of folks didn't like the way he rubbed Roddy White out of the offense, a longtime Falcon and Falcon sure. Great. Matt Ryan had his worst career as a pro, arguably. 16 interceptions, second lowest quarterback rating in the offense. So the jury's still out on Kyle Shanahan in Atlanta. They averaged 30 points a game those first six games last year. Teams adjusted and he didn't counter. So, folks want to see if this offense is legit. Can they sustain it over a season? Can they have the old Matt Ryan back? Can Sanu at least get close to what Roddy used to do? The jury's still out on Kyle Shanahan and his attack in Atlanta.
And the last question for me is, and it's about your division. It's a very difficult division, and there's been some ups and downs, and it seems like Carolina has risen to the top. And I guess, do you guys foresee this season as everyone kind of building a roster to chase what Carolina has produced over the last couple of years with their, breeding their young talent and it all kind of finally paying off at the right time for them?
Yeah, they are young, and they appear to be restocking that defense, with the tackles and the linebackers. They're really worried about the front. That's why they weren't too concerned about letting Josh Norman go. But the Falcons won't play their style of football. They believe it matches up well with Carolina. That offense isn't, that complex. Cam is going to fake the ball and throw it pretty quickly if they're going to pass. He's going to drop back and let his guys get deep into their route. So it's not, like they're getting out schemed or anything. But, they got to meet the toughness and the ferocity of the Carolina Panthers defense. That's probably the best unit in the division. And if you're going to pass the Panthers, you're going to have to score some points on that crew. And the Falcons have had trouble with that in the past.
D'Orlando, when you look at this team, who's emerging as that third wide receiver to complement Sanu and Julio Jones?
Yeah, last week they threw a couple deep balls to Audric Robertson. He's a guy who bounced around the league from Southern Methodist, SMU. He's got some speed.
He was with Washington with Kyle Shanahan.
Right, he was with Shanahan, but the other kid they really like is Justin Hardy, the fourth yep. round pick out of East Carolina. He's running in the third receiver spot right now. So they have a couple options there behind Julio and Sanu.
And then the other question, I know a lot of fantasy football people are listening and they want to know, Devontae Freeman, is he clearly the guy like it was last year? Has Tevin Coleman kind of emerged at all in that, or is this Devontae Freeman's team?
No, it's going to be a split. It's just a matter of how much of a split. 70-30 is what we're projecting. Just because, Devontae Freeman wore down as the season went on last year. He didn't average over 4 yards a carry. Averaged a little bit under 3 down the stretch. So, you know, they could benefit by having two running backs who could carry the load, and we can certainly see where that's going to be split.
All right, D. Orlando, appreciate the time. We'll see you at First Energy Stadium and Falcons-Browns tonight, game two of the preseason, kicking off at 8 o'clock.
All right, great. Matt and Nathan, thanks for having me.
You got it. Thank you.
All right, the great D. Orlando Ledbetter from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution there, giving his thoughts on this Falcons team. And Alex Mack, a guy that certainly seems to be happy to be there. They're happy to have him. This will be his first return to First Energy Stadium, and he'll go up against first-round pick Danny Shelton. A lot of firsts in there. It'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. That's one of the key matchups, I think, in this game tonight. When we come back, call us up, 216-578-0850. Matt and I will also give you three things to watch for. We'll tell you what we're looking for in this game when we return.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm. Rather Be Golfing says, I want to see anything that keeps me encouraged and no injuries. Here's a good one, though. You ready? From our guy Bob in Millersburg. Top 10 things Bob in Millersburg wants to see. Top 10 things Bob in Millersburg wants to see at tonight's Cleveland Falcons game. Are you ready?
Am I one of them?
Patience. Number one, Nassib shred through a lineman to sack the Atlanta quarterback. Number two, fan holding a sign that reads Rebecca Black loves CBD, which she should for all the play that her Friday song gets. Number three, Duke Johnson evading two-plus tackles on way to a touchdown. Number four, off-field camera shot of Nathan Zagura dipping his chips directly into salsa. I like that one. Number five, efficient clock management and transition of different units from sideline to the playing field. Number six, no safety scored against the Cleveland Browns. Number seven, camera shot of Matt Wilhelm wearing a T-shirt that reads Real Linebackers Fly Kites.
I like that.
I do like that. Number eight, stark contrast of better offensive line play from Green Bay to tonight. Number nine, no injuries. Number 10, win or lose, I want the majority of what I see to be encouraging. I think that's a pretty darn good list right there.
It is a good list.
That's a fantastic, Bob, which brings us in to what do you want to see tonight, Matt? We'll get three things from each of us that we're watching for. Let's start with your number one.
Number one I'm going to be watching, and I think it's something that we've talked about already in this show, and it's those wide receivers. And it's how things are going to shake up. We're going to have potentially no Corey Coleman, probably no Josh Gordon, and it's everyone else. And I think this is an open battle. You know, I don't think the door's been slammed on Taylor Gabriel. I don't think the door's been slammed on Jordan Payton. You know, but one snap ain't cutting it. And I think what Jordan Payton needs to do is he needs to salvage every opportunity and rep that he has. I think the maturity of Hollywood Higgins, to have him be your fourth or fifth wide receiver based on the number of reps he gets in this football game, the Bucs football game, and a significant portions of the Bears game, for him to develop quickly and be a rotational player by the start of the season.
And when you think about it, so today you've got Hawkins potentially out. I don't know if he's been confirmed out or not, but Hawkins potentially out. You've got Gordon potentially out, Coleman potentially out, Ricardo Lewis has a hamstring potentially out. I believe that's four of the six guys that are going to be on this team.
Right.
So if you are, and Terrell Pryor is going to make it. So really that, and maybe Hollywood Higgins. Are they going to go seven receivers? I don't know. But you got Gordon, who won't be there, you know, for the first four games, won't count against that number. So I think if you're Marlon Moore, Taylor Gabriel, this is your night, Darius Jennings, to try and step up. You're going to get more playing time than you would have otherwise. This is your opportunity to make that mark. Now, I'm going to stick on the offensive side of the ball. One of the things I'm watching for is just smoothness on the offense. What does that mean? Good pass protection for Robert Griffin III, which if Joe Thomas, you know, nursing that back, if he gets a day off, can someone step in there and protect the blind side of RG3? That's going to be very, very important. Can this ground game get going? I want to see Crow and Duke effectively running the football, and I want to see points from that first team. But if nothing else, let's see that ground game get going, knowing that we're without, you know, really three of our four top receivers tonight, if that ends up being the case. Again, we won't have the official word on that until an hour and a half before kickoff, but if I want to see this ground game, because if you can run the football effectively, once you get all those weapons out there, it's only going to be easier to run the football, and it's going to open more things up for big plays in play action. All right, what's the second thing you want to see?
Second thing I want to see is pressure on the quarterback, and that is defensive pressure on their quarterback. And that's Ogba, Nassib, Kruger, Orchard. Those are guys that will make up predominantly the first unit and potentially the second unit amongst the defensive linemen. And I expect these guys to play a quarter, if not maybe a series into the second quarter. And I don't necessarily need to go, oh, we had four sacks in a preseason game. You know, save those for when it matters. But I want us to affect the quarterback. Batted down balls, knockdown, quarterback hurries, maybe some sacks. But I want us to see more of a presence in the offensive backfield than we haven't had in week one. And I think and we always talk about how hard it is to gauge defensively how great or good or great our front is going to be, because you can't do that. You can't hit the quarterback in practice. This is your chance to do it. Then let's get back there and actually do it.
And I want, along that line, Ogba Nassib looked very impressive. I want to see other people getting to the quarterback. I want to see if you've got Meter and Shelton on the line together. Who's that third lineman? What does that look like? Can they get to the quarterback? Because getting to the quarterback is going to be so key for this defense, as it will be stopping the run. Again, dominating at the point of attack. Who wants to step up with those two rookies? And I want to see Ogba and Nassib also get some opportunities against the first team of the Atlanta Falcons and see where they are. Especially Ogba. I want to see where he's at.
I agree.
All right, third thing that you want to see here.
Third thing is going to be, for me, it's I'm going to focus on the quarterback position. I mean, for gosh sakes, we're the Cleveland Browns. The eye is always going to be on the quarterback position. And I just want to see RG3 continue to take those steps. I want to see RG3 throw the football down the field. I want to see him stay in the pocket as he did at Green Bay and deliver a catchable football to wide receivers with some zip on it to get some yards after the catch. And then I'm kind of taking Josh McCown for granted, for the player that he is, for the person that he is, for the leader that he is, for the teammate that he is. And I'm going to go right to Cody Kessler. And I want to see him right some of the wrongs. I want to see him applying some of the coaching that he received from Hugh Jackson and Pep Hamilton over the last 6 days to go out there and just – and it's not – I'm not worried about the safeties or stepping out double lines. That's not going to be a situation we'll ever probably come across again. But I want to see him expedite his process, shorten down his thinking – clean huddles, moving in the pocket, and to show me that he's taken a step as well, because we've known RG3 is taking those steps to be our starter, to be named, and so on and so forth. But I want to see Kessler, a little hunger from Kessler to get better in this live scenario, because once the season starts, not going to have a lot of reps either at practice running our stuff, and probably not at all in the game.
I want to see a clean tackling game on defense, and I'm also going to watch for the back end of this defense. Poyer and Campbell, Raheem Moore, Derek Kindred, first and second team guys at safety, Pierre Desir when he gets back there. I want to see a safety make a play, a game-changing type of a play, a turnover, a big pass breakup on third down, a safety blitz get to the quarterback, a great run fit and stop them on third down. I want to see these safeties, because we have so many kind of questions about what it's going to be like with two new starters at the safety position, with Deshaun Gibson, who's been to a Pro Bowl, Dante Whitner, who's been to multiple Pro Bowls, both gone. So I want to see these young guys step in with their opportunity and show something against this Falcons team. This should be, for the Browns, a lot of these defenders that were here. Now, obviously, Campbell wasn't here, but Poyer was certainly here. Kirksey was here when Kyle Shanahan was here. These defenders should be familiar with this offensive scheme.
Yes.
On some level, and we're going to get very much the base part of it, right? So I want to see how they respond, and I want to see somebody make some plays on the back end of that defense. And again, the other thing you're looking at, the young guys, who continues to step up. Dominique Alexander flashed. I thought Scooby Wright flashed. I also thought, you know, Tracy Howard flashed. Can they keep that up, that momentum, to help them solidify their spots on this football team? And also, the other thing I'm looking for is, when this first team goes out there, what changes are there from this last week to this week, if any? And if when the second team goes out there, what changes? Because
right, That's
going to tell you about those bubble battles.
Absolutely. And just, you know, kind of, I like got excited like a giddy kid. I'm always going to watch the defense predominantly before I watch the offense, even though it's an offensive league. It's just the way I'm wired. And what you kind of said, from a special team standpoint, let's see how much the depth chart shuffled around in 6 days based on Green Bay, based on probably 3 good days of work between these football games. And then I want to see, I'm going to continue to watch who's starting on special teams, because that's a big indication of, you know, through essentially, 3.5 weeks of training camp and potentially 2 preseason games, who's earning those spots. And just like I said with RG3 all offseason, that he was going to be the starter. Whoever goes out there first is the coach's best chance or our best chance of saying who's a starter and who's not. So who's making up those special teams? Has Scooby Wright or Dominic Alexander crept onto some of those special teams based on their performance at linebacker and also special teams from Green Bay?
Yeah, we will certainly. I want to see all this stuff. I just want to see them play. I want to see them stay healthy. I want to see them execute. We talked about the effort, the buy-in. We know that's there. Now we need to see the execution, or at least improved execution from 1 week ago. Progress week after week for this Cleveland Browns team. Fontana, are you there?
Yes.
What are you looking forward to seeing tonight, Fontana? Put you on the spot.
I just want to see... I hate to really kind of point it at Cam Irving, but I need to see a better game out of him. I rewatched the first game. I didn't think he played well. I know that Hugh Jackson said he played okay, but I need to see him play. I'm going to have all eyes on Cam Irving tonight.
All right, Cam Irving. I think Danny Shelton. I think a lot of eyes on Danny Shelton as well. The two first-round picks from a year ago in the middle of the offense and defense, respectively. We're going to have eyes on them, see what they can show against what is going to be certainly a very good center. We know that in Alex Mack, who spent the beginning of his career with the Cleveland Browns. So those guys, I think, certainly in the spotlight here for preseason game number two. When we come back, Jenny Vrentis from the Monday Morning Quarterback, who was here in Berea when the Browns named RG3 the starter. She had an exclusive one-on-one with Hugh and RG3. She wrote an article about it as well. She will be our guest to talk about the quarterback-coach relationship and what she thinks the Browns will be capable of here in 2016.
I've been counting on my steps, on my nose. Just you are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Skirra, Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. And I don't know if we're going to have Jenny Vrentis for you. We're trying, but maybe
we can only do what we can do, man.
Maybe she feels tortured by my voice. She does not want to come on here today. Now, Browns and Falcons, of course, you remember the last time the Browns played the Falcons. It was that 26-24 thriller. Gary Barnage had a big catch over the middle, set up a game-winning field goal there. But I believe at the time it was Billy Cundiff who made that field goal.
It was
the game that also featured Joel Bitonio chasing down Devin Hester on
Josh
a failed
Gordon, right?
field goal attempt. Josh Gordon's return, he had over 100 yards in that game, and the Browns certainly got the job done. When you look at this team, a very impressive group of triplets. Matt Ryan, Devontae Freeman had over 1,000 yards, 11 touchdowns rushing. Julio Jones, 1,871 yards, 8 touchdowns. We talked about this being a good test for the Browns in terms of offense. Well, last year, the Falcons' 6th best passing offense, 7th best total offense overall. That is going to be a good test for this defense, especially with that first team out there. And, you know, in their mind, they added a weapon. They didn't use Roddy White last
right.
year.
How much is of those rankings do you believe that the threat of Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, both produced and created for the other essentially assets that make up the Atlanta Falcons?
Well, it was interesting. It was Devontae Freeman carrying the mail the beginning of the season for them. And then all of a sudden, obviously Julio was good all year long, but it was really a lot of Devontae Freeman early. His numbers in the beginning of the season were spectacular. And then as D'Orlando alluded to, that the defenses seemed to catch up. But Julio Jones is one of those true game-changing wide receivers, a guy who completely changes the way that teams cover and affect. He needs a double team. He needs constant attention. He's a good down-the-field blocker as well, which is important for a wide receiver, especially in that zone scheme. So, yes, I think he's the straw that stirs the drink for that offense. If all of a sudden he got hurt, I don't think that offense is nearly the same.
And how much do you think if Julio Jones got hurt? And I think was it towards the end of last season he got a little bit of banged up, or was it the 2014?
Two years ago.
Okay. How much do you think Julio Jones' health has to do with the Atlanta Falcons' success or failure collectively as a season goes on?
Well, if they can get it done on the defensive side of the ball, then I think that it would go a long way, because he, as I said, is the key to that offense. By the way, in case you were wondering, Matt Wilhelm, the Browns 9-2 all time against the Falcons in the preseason, 6-0 at home, although these two teams have not met since 2003 when the Browns beat the Falcons 20-9 at First Energy Stadium in a preseason game. So it's been a long time before these teams have met in the preseason. Maybe we'll get to go to Atlanta next year. I don't know.
We'll see.
It's interesting how the preseason has changed. It used to always be, you know, Detroit. That's out of the slate now. Used to, obviously, Chicago's still there. It used to be the Rams, but now they've moved to Los Angeles. To get the Buccaneers 2 years in a row, I think, is very interesting. Falcons, we had the Redskins a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be very, very, very interesting to see this all play out. But I think it's a good test for the Browns defense, because when you have that zone run game and then you have those play action boots off of it, everything, I remember one of the staples of Kyle Shanahan when he was here was everything looked the same from the linemen. The action on the run and the play pass had to look identical, and that's how they set you up for those big plays, which is why I think the safeties maintaining their discipline is going to be key to
it. It's so funny that that is absolutely true. As you look at them, you try to make it look the best or most like the run play or the same. But where the discipline, as you just mentioned, really comes into play is defensively, if you are looking at the right things. So like as an outside linebacker, the backside hip of the tackle that's going down away from you, okay? If you really slowed down and had a camera rotate around and look at the back hip of an offense, of the backside of an offensive tackle on a bootleg and on a zone away, they look completely different. So, and that's the way, that's how sometimes when you see a linebacker literally like shoot out, or an outside linebacker, you know, sack the quarterback on a bootleg away from him, and almost the quarterback's caught off guard to have someone in his face that quickly. It's when the discipline creeps into your mind as a defensive player. It's like, it really does go from all 11 guys down to just me and what I should be looking at. Because if you look at the right things, it is an amazing tell. All the little things in this zone scheme look the same on an all 22, but when I'm living in my world, a run play versus a pass play look completely different. And so that's why I think also too, you know, the footwork that Christian Kirksey and DeMario Davis, I'm speaking of myself as an outside linebacker, if you're turning in running and you're feeling stressed to get outside and get into your gap that it's moving, is when you see those guys have to hit the brakes and run in the other direction when that quarterback pulls the football and is bootlegging, and he's getting that, like I said, that play with the tight end running across your face and that big dig coming in behind, or that big over route getting in that 18-yard zone. But if you're looking at the right things, it's step, shuffle, shuffle, cleats in the ground, not step, crossover, run, and then have to change direction and come back.
So who does this zone scheme put the most stress on in a defense? Is it the inside linebackers? Is it the safeties? Who does it put the most stress on?
I mean, you can run you run it right or you run it left. It puts the most stress, I believe, on the backside players.
Okay.
So it's at one point or another, because they can run it left, they can run it right, or they can run it up the middle, right? Those are their options. Yes, they are. There you go.
Yes.
That's what you always say. Whoever the backside of the outside zone plays are really the guys that I'm talking about when I say you got to be looking at the right things.
Okay.
Because there are dead giveaways in a zone scheme that allow you to make a quick read to commit to the run or get those cleats in the ground and expect some type of waggle or boot action.
If you're the outside backer on the side they're running to, the strong side outside backer, you've got to set that edge, right?
It's mano a mano. My face mask on his right, if they're running right, to a defensive right, it's my outside mask almost on his, what would be his right ear hole. So I'm controlling his outside shoulder, and eventually I can't just dance with him and continue to extend that play.
Yeah,
it's I've got to shock him, extend my arms, and then put my cleats in the ground and fight back to basically create a wall of – And all the while, Paul Kruger, Nate Orchard, Barkevious Mingo, Emmanuel Ogba, whoever, or Joe Schobert, they have to have at any point, they have to be able to shed that defender inside and still make the tackle with their outside arm. So they might commit two arms, but you need to be able to shed that defender and be able to play off. But it creates a wall, and that allows DeMario Davis, Christian Kirksey, Ibrahim Campbell to not feel that they need to be able to run all the way to a sideline to make a tackle, that they know that Kruger, Orchard, you know, Mingo, Schobert are going to set that edge, and then we're playing in that phone booth. And now all I have to do is find my gap based on where Shelton and Meter and John Hughes and those guys are fitting in their gaps up front.
And it's going to be, I think, a big game for Nate Orchard when you watch that, setting that edge. Paul Kruger, Ogba when he's out there as well. And by the way, my guy John Costco from Pro Football Focus, when we were talking about Orchard second half, he said, In December, Nate Orchard was top five in pass rushing productivity in the entire NFL. He was better than Khalil Mack and Von Miller on a per snap basis.
Did I say rookie of the year in December?
You did say that. Small sample size, but certainly encouraging. And I think this is a game where you're going to get a good opportunity to get a look at him as well. All right, we're going to take a quick – should we just go to her right now? Do you want us to go to her now? All right, we got Jenny Brentis now from Monday Morning Quarterback joining us on the Ohio Business Machines Hotline. Jenny, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Sorry about the delay.
That's all right. No worries. Listen, you're a popular person. We were trying to track you down. We've got you now. And I know you were here when RG3 was named the starter. You sat down, wrote that article after talking with RG3 and Hugh Jackson. So a lot of people around the nation are skeptical that RG3 can be a franchise quarterback again. What was the impression that you came away with after spending time with RG3 and Hugh Jackson?
Well, I think they're really relying on Jackson's ability to kind of get the best out of players, and you've seen him do that in a lot of different stops. So, you know, they bring in RG3, they don't draft a quarterback this year, and they figure, they're rebuilding the roster. Let's get the most, see if we can get the most out of this guy whose opportunities have ended elsewhere. And I think what Hugh Jackson does really well is he kind of understands what his quarterback needs in any given situation. And with Griffin, I think it's kind of been a combination of, you know, some tough love, but also someone to kind of build back up his confidence. And Griffin pointed to one moment in the spring when, you know, Jackson was correcting some part of his technique, and he's really harping on something. And finally, he said to Griffin, "Don't be afraid to be great." And that apparently, in that moment, it really resonated with Griffin. He said a lot of things kind of clicked, and he kind of realized the expectation level and the extra steps he needed to take to kind of get to a different level. And so I think that was kind of a really good example of the kind of coach that Jackson is, especially with his quarterbacks.
Jenny, and to reiterate kind of everything that you just said in a nutshell, having to spend the time that you did with both RG3 and Hugh Jackson, they both referenced that they're kind of like minds in their approach to this season, and they're kind of on the same wavelength. Is that something that you picked up on in spending a little bit of time with each of them?
I think that's really true. I mean, I really think that Griffin has bought into Jackson. I mean, I think he's come from a situation in Washington where he wasn't always on the same page with his coaches, and probably at certain times felt like, you know, their expectations were different from what he wanted. So I think Jackson's been really clear about, you know, what he needs from Griffin, but I think it's also been in a way that he has earned the trust of him. And I think that's a good starting point. I mean, I don't think Jackson or the Browns, you know, they could not say at this point if he's a long-term answer. They could not say how successful he's going to be this season. I mean, but I think that the confidence they have is Jackson is the kind of coach who will bring out the best in players. And I think you kind of have to be with a roster, you know, they're in the middle of a rebuild. You know, they have a lot of young guys, a lot of new pieces. So you basically have to take the pieces that you have and try to get the most out of every single one of them.
When you look at this union and you look at RG3 in particular, you talked about some his time in Washington, but did you get the sense that this is a change guy? Because a lot of the people who haven't had an opportunity to sit down with him still think that this is the bad RG3. This is the guy who can destroy a locker room. This is RG me. What was your sense of where Robert Griffin III is in his own personal journey as it relates to being a quarterback in the NFL?
I mean, I think it's all about environment, right? And I think, you know, a lot of factors, you know, happened in Washington for the situation to kind of spiral the way that he did. You know, he came in his rookie year and he was such a sensation and the city was excited. And then he had the really bad injury and didn't have that first full off season. And, you know, then his coaches kind of had a different idea for the kind of offense that he would run than he did. You know, and then Shanahan gets fired and Gruden comes in. So that's just a lot of different factors, right, to kind of churn through and to affect the way a person is and how he reacts to things. So I think, you know, here in Cleveland, he, you know, it's a cliche probably to say a fresh start, but that's really what it is. It's a new environment. It's a different environment. He can start from scratch with his teammates, with his coaches. And I mean, again, that's where I think it comes back to putting trust in your coaching staff to kind of keeping this guy in the right mindset. And if things happen in Washington that, you know, that he wasn't happy with or doesn't want to happen again, you put your trust in the coaches to kind of lead him down the right path.
And Jenny, the national perspective, which, you know, I kind of take for granted that, you know, you will represent in this mindset, is there an optimistic look on the Cleveland Browns with what they've done with Sashi Brown, Hugh Jackson, bringing in RG3 and drafting guys like Corey Coleman and having those 14 picks? Or is everyone kind of like stepping back and waiting to see exactly what's going to pan out now with all the change they've had?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, when you have an organization that hasn't had success in a long time, it's natural that there's going to be skepticism, right? So definitely that skepticism exists. I just think, having been there, there's a different vibe around the team right now. I just feel like, you know, Jackson's a really great presence on the practice field. You can tell that players respond to him. I think Sashi's been a really good, you know, front man for the organization, and it just seems like there's a concerted effort from everyone to be on the same page and to understand that you have to be patient with this rebuilding process. I think that's something that stood out when I talked to Sashi, was just kind of saying, you know, obviously you're going to have to cut down your roster and you're going to have to make personnel changes and things like that. But just the sense of, like, if a guy makes a mistake, you know, don't have him feeling like it's the end. Like, you know, RG3, for instance, he's not on a short leash. And just trying to build these pieces together, and you know, I think they know it's going to be a multi-year plan. I mean, you can't sort of tear down the roster and try to rebuild it and expect to be good in year one. I mean, obviously they'll try to win games, but I think, you know, it's a multi-year plan, and I think hopefully there's that patience now to let the plan unfold.
Jenny, what do you think? You talked about a multi-year plan. What are your expectations for this team in 2016?
I mean, that's a tough question, right? Because, yeah, when you look at a process like this, you know, you want to build through the draft, so free agents walk, and you expect you're having compensatory picks. So that right there, you're thinking about a couple years, right? So you let a free agent walk, you get compensatory picks next year. You don't get that new guy in the building until the year after that. He's not really comfortable to year two. That's already the third year of the process. So, I don't, it's a tough division. You know, I don't think they're going to be contending for the division crown this year, but I think what you have to do is reset a foundation and get a better sense this year what pieces you do have and what you want to build on and what you want to change for year two. You know, I recently spent some time in Atlanta with Dan Quinn, and he mentioned this, and I thought it was a great kind of insight into, like, the difference between the first year and the second year. You know, the first year, he said, you can implement the culture that you want. And he felt like that came easily there. And I think that's coming easily in Cleveland.
Sure.
You can tell the guys the kind of team that you want to have, the kind of energy you want to have around the team. But until the end of the first year, you know, you don't exactly know how you want to deploy the pieces you have. You don't know which pieces you want to hang on to. So in year two, that's when you can start to kind of reshape the roster, really with the vision you have in mind. You can bring in new additions, and you can also get the most out of the pieces that you already have. So there's a big difference between year one and year two. So I think it's hard to have, you know, you obviously want to win games, and it's a year-to-year business in the NFL, but that's where, you know, where the organization maybe hasn't had patience in the past. I think that has to be really important moving forward.
It will be, and we want to start another step in that progress tonight, preseason game two, the Browns and the Packers. Jenny, thanks so much for the time, and we look forward to talking with you again soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
All right, Jenny Brent is from the Monday Morning Quarterback, our guest there on the Ohio Business Machines Hotline. We'll be back to wrap it up with our final thoughts right after this.
Listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Don't forget tonight, starting at 7 o'clock on News Channel 5, it's Building the Browns, episode number 3 at 7, and then at 7:30, myself along with Andy Baskin live from First Energy Stadium on Browns Countdown. All the latest, Matt Wilhelm will be on Browns Radio pregame on the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network. So you can see all of that tonight or listen to that tonight. And then, of course, the game on News Channel 5, Mike Patrick, Solomon Wilcott's on the call. And then on radio, it'll be Jim Donovan, Doug Deacon, and then myself on the sideline as we get ready for preseason game number 2. All right, Matt Wilhelm, final thought leading into this one.
Final thought. I want to see, I keep saying about the next step, and especially when it comes to RG3, I want to see a collective next step from the Cleveland Browns. We saw what they looked like week 1. it was good, not great, and I want to see that step an inch closer towards great, inch toward a team that can compete in those 16 opportunities they have.
Agreed. I want to see this team progress, and I really want to see this first team offense get into the end zone. I want to see them march down the field, get in the end zone, take care of the football, come out of this healthy. All right, I want to thank Jenny Brentis for being with us, D. Orlando Ledbetter for being with us as well. We'll have our full game recap and breakdown for you here tomorrow on CBD. Stay tuned for some Browns pregame, some Golden Boys, and more here for Matt Fontana and Matt Wilhelm. I'm Nathan Zagura saying thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily
on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.